Kaylin's gaze drifted through the darkening room from table to basin to cupboard. She would hate to leave, only to have Richard show up a minute after she left. Camille thought it was odd that Nikki wasn't home. That they were both gone was troubling.
"Where does he work?" Kaylin asked.
"At the site."
"Site? What site?"
Camille gestured into the distance.
"Out at the Emperor's new palace, they're building. Tomorrow's the big dedication."
"The new palace is done?"
"Oh, no, it's years and years from being done. It's only started, really. But they are going to dedicate it to the Creator now. A lot of people have come to Altur-Rang for the ceremony."
"Richard is a laborer helping to build the palace?"
Camille nodded.
"He's a carver. At least he is now. He used to work at Ishak's transport company, but then he got arrested."
Kaylin seized him by the shirt.
"He was arrested?
They tortured him?"
Camille's eyes turned away from her frantic expression.
"I gave Nikki my money so she could get in to see him. She and Ishak and Victor the blacksmith got him out. He was hurt bad. When he got better, the officials made him take a job carving."
Camille's words spun through her head. The ones that floated above all the rest were that Richard had recovered.
"He carves statues now?"
Camille nodded again.
"He carves people in stone to decorate the walls of the palace. He helps me with my own carvings. I can show you out back."
Wonder of wonders, Richard carving.
But all the carvings they had seen in the old world were grotesque. Richard would not like to carve such ugliness. Obviously he had no choice.
"Maybe later."
Kaylin rubbed her fingers across her brow as she considered what to do.
"Can you take me there now?
To the site where Richard works?"
"Yes, if you'd like. But don't you want to wait to see if he comes home first? He may be home soon."
"You said he works at night sometimes."
"For the last few months, he worked at night a lot. He's carving some special statue for them."
Camille's face brightened.
"He told me to go tomorrow to see it. With the dedication tomorrow, it may be he's still finishing it. I've never seen where he works. But Victor the blacksmith may know."
"We should go see this blacksmith then."
Camille scratched his head again as his expression turned to disappointment.
"But the blacksmith will be gone for the night."
"Is there anyone else out there now?"
"There may be a lot of people there. Crowds go out there to see the place. I've gone out there myself. And tonight there may be more than usual because of tomorrow's ceremony."
That might be just what they needed. They wouldn't look so out of place searching the area for Richard if there were crowds out there. It would give them an excuse to look around.
"We'll give him an hour," Kaylin said.
"If he doesn't return by then it's most likely because he's working. If he doesn't come back, we'll have to go out there and look for him."
"What if Nikki shows up?" Kara asked. Camille waved his hand to dismiss their concern.
"I'll go out on the front steps and watch for Nikki. You two can wait in here where no one will see you. I'll come warn you if I see Nikki coming up the street. I can always take you out the back way if I see her returning home."
Kaylin laid a hand over his shoulder and gave it a squeeze.
"That sounds good to me, Camille.
We'll wait in here."
Camille hurried out to his guard post. Kaylin glanced around the tidy room.
"Why don't you get some sleep?" Kara said.
"I'll stand guard."
"You stood guard last."
Kaylin was exhausted. She glanced down at the sleeping pallet closest to Richard's things, then nodded. She lay down in his bed. The room was getting dark. Just being where he slept was a comfort. Being so close, but so far, she couldn't fall asleep.
Nikki's heart sank when she saw that Richard wasn't in their room. Camille was nowhere to be found. She had felt so good out at the site, watching all the people come to see Richard's statue. Throngs of people had come to see it and had been uplifted. Some had been angered by it. She, of all people, understood that. Still, Nikki could hardly believe the hateful reaction of some people to such beauty. Some people hated life. She understood that, too. There were those who refused to see, who didn't want to see. Other people, though, had a reaction much like hers. It had all come clear for her. For the first time in her life, life made sense. Richard had tried to tell her, but she hadn't listened. She had heard the truth before, too, but others, her mother, Brother Narev, the Order, had shouted it down and shamed her out of listening. Her mother had trained her well, and from the first day she had seen Brother Narev, Nikki had been a soldier in the Order's army. When she saw the statue, she saw at last the truth she had always refused to see, suddenly and clearly standing before her. This was the valid vision of life for which she had hungered, yet which she had evaded her entire life. She understood now why life had seemed so empty, so pointless. She herself had rendered it so in refusing to think. Nikki had been a slave to everyone of need. She had given her masters their only real weapon against her. She had surrendered to their twisted lies by putting the crippling chains of guilt around her own neck for them, giving herself freely into slavery to the whims and wishes of others, instead of living her life as she should have for herself. She had never asked why it was right for her to be a slave to another's desires, but not evil for them to enslave her. She was not contributing to the betterment of mankind, but was merely a servant to countless puling little tyrants. Evil was not one large entity, but a ceaseless torrent of small wrongs left unchallenged until they festered into monsters. She had lived her whole life on shifting quicksand, where reason and the intellect were not to be trusted, where only faith was valid and blind faith was sacred. She herself had enforced mindless conformity to that empty evil. She had helped bring everyone together, so they might have one collective neck around which the worst among men, in the name of good, could put their leash. Richard had answered their tower of empty lies in one righteously beautiful statement for all to see, and had punctuated it with the simple words on the back of the bronze sundial. Her life was hers to live by right. She belonged to no one. Freedom exists first and foremost in the mind of the rational thinking individual. That was what Richard's statue had shown her, that he had carved it, proved it. A captive of her and the Order, his ideals had risen above both. Nikki realized only now that she had always known her father held this same value. She had seen it in his eyes, even though he could never rationalize it. His values were expressed through the integrity of his work. That was why, from a young age, she had wanted to be an armorer like him. It was his vision of life she had always loved and admired, but suppressed, because of her mother and her ilk. It was that same look in Richard's eyes, that same value for life held dear, that had drawn Nikki to him. Nikki knew now that she had worn black ever since her mother's death in an endless, shapeless longing to bury not just her mother's hold over her, but more importantly, her mother's evil ideals. She was so sorry Richard wasn't home. She wanted to tell him that he had given her the answer she had sought. She could never ask his forgiveness, though. What she had done to him was beyond forgiveness. She saw that now. The only thing she could do now was to reverse the wrong she had done. As soon as she found him, they would leave. They would go back to the new world. They would find Kalin. Then Nikki would set things right. She had to be close to Kalin, at least within sight, in order to undo the spell. Then Kalin would be free. Then Richard would be free. As much as Nikki loved Richard, she understood now that he should be with Kalin, the woman he loved. Her desire for him gave her no right to do as she had done. She had no right to another's life, as they had no right to hers. Nikki lay down in her bed and wept at the thought of the outrage she had done to them both. She was overcome with shame. She had been so blind for so long. She could not believe how she had thrown her entire life away, fighting for evil just because it claimed to be good. She truly had been a sister of the dark. She at least could work to correct the harm she had caused. Kalin could hardly believe the signs of the crowd. by the light of the moon brightening the thin layer of hazy clouds, and by torches here and there throughout the valley, it looked like the open area, as far as she could see, was packed with people. The numbers had to be in the hundreds of thousands. Thunderstruck, Camille threw up his arms. "It's the middle of the night. I've never seen so many people out here. What are they all doing here?"
"How would we know?" Kara sniped. She was in a foul mood, unhappy that they hadn't found Richard yet.
The city had been crowded with people, too. With the city guards prowling the streets, uneasy about all the late-night activity, it had been necessary to restrain their eagerness in favor of caution. It had taken them hours to get out to the site by way of back streets, dark roads, and Camille's guided tour of alleyways. The lad pointed. "It's up there." They followed him up a road lined with workshops, most closed up and dark. A few had men inside, still working at benches by the light of lamps or candles. Kaylin reached under her cloak and curled her fingers around the hilt of her sword when she saw a man running in their direction. He saw them and skidded to a halt.
"Have you seen it?"
"Seen what?" Kaylin asked. He pointed excitedly. "Down at the palace, in the plaza." He started running again. He called behind as he went. "I have to go get my wife and sons. They have to see it." Kaylin and Kara shared a look in the near darkness. Camille ran over to a shop and tugged on a door, but it was shut up tight. "Victor isn't here." His voice couldn't conceal his disappointment. "It's too late." "Do you know what's down in the plaza?" Kaylin asked him. He thought a moment. "The plaza. I know the place, but wait. That's where Richard told me to go. The plaza. He said to go to the plaza tomorrow." "Let's go down there now and have a look," Kaylin said. Camille waved a hand, pointing. "This is the shortest way, down the hill behind the blacksmith shop." So jammed was the place with people that it took them over an hour just to make it down the hill and across the expansive grounds around the palace. Even though it was the middle of the night, more people kept arriving all the time. Once they reached the palace, Kaylin discovered they couldn't get to the plaza. There was a huge mob of people stretching back forever along the front wall, waiting to go up to the plaza. When Kaylin, Kara, and Camille tried to go around and get up there to see what was going on, it nearly started a riot. People had been waiting a long time to reach the plaza, and they didn't like having others try to push ahead. Kaylin saw several men try to get ahead by going around the waiting crowd. They were set upon by the mob. Kara pulled her hand out from under her cloak and casually showed Kaylin her ajil. Kaylin shook her head. "Long odds with Jagang's army are one thing, but the three of us against a few hundred thousand does not sound good to me." "Really?" Kara asked. "I thought it roughly even." Kaylin only smiled. Even Kara knew better than to go against a mob. Camille frowned in puzzlement at Kara's humor. When they found the back of the line, they melted in. It wasn't long before the line behind them grew so large that they could no longer see the back end winding out into the grounds. The people all around seemed filled with a strange kind of nervous expectancy. A round woman in front, bundled up in little more than rags, turned a plump grin on them. She held out what looked like a loaf of bread.
"Would you like some?"
she asked.
"Thank you, no," Kaylin said, "but that's very kind of you to offer." "I've never made such an offer before," the woman giggled. "Seems the right thing to do now, doesn't it?"
Kaylin had no idea what the woman was talking about, but said, "Yes, it does." Throughout the night, the line inched along. Kaylin's back ached painfully. She even saw Kara grimace as she stretched. "I still think we just ought to draw weapons and get up there," Kara finally complained. Kaylin leaned in close.
"What difference does it make? Where have we to go before morning?
When morning comes, we can go up to the blacksmith's place or to the carving areas over there and hopefully find Richard, but we can do nothing tonight."
"Maybe he will be at his room now."
"You want to run into Nikki again? You know what she's capable of. The next time we may not be so lucky to escape. We haven't come all this way to battle her. I just want to see Richard.
Even if Richard goes back there, and we don't know that he will, we do know he's got to return here in the morning.
I suppose, Kara grouched. The sky was taking on a faint reddish glow by the time they made it to the foot of the marble steps. They could hear moaning and wailing up ahead. Kalin couldn't see the cause, but people up on the plaza were weeping freely. Oddly enough, some people could be heard to laugh joyfully. A few others cursed bitterly, as if they had been robbed of their life savings at the point of a knife. As they slowly made their way up the steps, Kalin and Kara tried to stay low behind the people surrounding them so as not to draw attention to themselves. The plaza above was lit by dozens of torches, their flickering light giving an indication of the vastness of the crowds. The smell of the burning pitch mixed sourly with the stale sweat of the packed multitude. Through a momentary gap between people in front of her, Kalin snatched a quick glance ahead. She blinked at what she saw, but it was gone almost as fast as she saw it, screened by the throng. The people ahead wept, some, it sounded, with joy. Kalin began to make out the polite voices of men asking the crowd to keep moving, imploring them to give others a chance. The ragtag collection of people steadily advanced up onto the white marble of the plaza, like beggars at a coronation. The torchlight was finally being replaced by radiant daylight as the sun cleared the horizon. Golden rays washed the face of the palace. The scenes carved in the stone up on the walls were disturbing. If they were any different from the others she had seen in the old world, it was only in that they were more gruesome, more horrifying, more desolately hopeless, and more plentiful. Kalin's mind played over the lines of her statue of spirit. The idea of Richard having to carve such things as she saw up on the walls sickened her. She felt a sense of gloom overcoming her. This was the order. Pain, suffering, death. This was what was in store for the new world at the hands of these monsters. She couldn't take her eyes from the scenes on the walls, from the fate that awaited the people of her homeland. The fate so many blindly embraced. Then, all of a sudden, as the people shuffled around and passed, Kalin beheld the white marble figures rising up before her. The sight took her breath in a gasp. The rays of dawn lit them as if the sun itself had risen just to caress the lustrous forms in all their glory. Kara gripped Kalin's arm, her fingers digging in painfully as she, too, was taken by the sight. The statue of the man and woman seized Kalin's imagination with their nobility of spirit. She felt tears run down her cheeks, and then she was weeping openly, like the people around her, at the majesty, the dignity, the beauty of what stood before her. It was everything the carvings on the walls all around were not. It offered freely everything they denied. Life, it said at the base. Kalin had to gasp through her tears to draw breath. She clutched at Kara's arm, and Kara clutched at hers, the two of them holding on to each other for support as the crowd swept them along in a current of shared emotion. The man in the statue was not Richard, but there was much of Richard in it. The woman was not Kalin, but there was enough of her form in it that Kalin felt her face flushing at others seeing it. "Please look and move along so that others may view it too," the men at the sides kept calling. They weren't wearing uniforms. They were as tattered-looking as everyone else. They appeared to be ordinary citizens who had just stepped in to help. The woman who had offered the bread fell to her knees in wailing. Arms respectfully lifted her and helped her to move on. The woman living in the old world had probably never seen a thing of such beauty. As Kalin shuffled around the statue, unable to take her eyes from it, she reached out to touch it, as did everyone else. As she was carried past, her fingers met the smooth flesh in stone, knowing it was also where Richard's fingers had been. She wept all the harder. As she moved past, Kalin saw then that the curve of the sundial had words on the back. "Your life is yours alone. Rise up and live it." The words were visible on the lips of many who saw them. The crowd kept coming up the steps, forcing the people around the statue to move on. Men at the rear guided people between the columns,
out through the rear of the partially built palace and out of the way so that others could come up to view the statue.
"I wish Benjamin could see this," Kara said, her blue eyes brimming with tears.
Kaelin was overcome with a burble of laughter.
"I was going to say I wish Richard could see it."
Kara laughed with her as they were swept away by the river of people.
Camille grabbed Kaelin's hand. She saw him take Kara's too.
"Yeah," he said with authority. "Richard carved it."
"Where to?" Kaelin asked him. "Where do you think we can find him?"
"I guess we should make our way back up to the blacksmith's place.
Hopefully Richard will show up there. If not, maybe Victor will know where he is."
Camille's words, "Richard carved it," rang joyfully through her mind.
Chapter 67. Richard climbed through the high window and dropped to the ground, his boots hitting with a thud. He could hardly believe he had slept the whole night under a tarp in the back of a wagon. He could hardly believe that Jory didn't wake him so he could go home when they were close. The man probably didn't think it was his job, and so he wouldn't do it. Richard sighed. Maybe Jory hadn't known he was in the back.
Richard brushed himself off. He stood outside the transport company building where he used to work when he had first come to Aaltoarang, and where he had been locked in all night. Of course, he had been asleep, so he didn't know Jory had locked him inside. Richard didn't know where to go, home or to the retreat. The sky glowed orange and violet in the bright sunrise. He supposed there was no point in going home. That would only make him late to work. He decided he had better get to work.
Work? What work?
This was the day of the celebration, the dedication. When Brother Narev saw the statue, Richard was not going to have to worry about work any more. He knew that if he ran, tried to escape, it would only trigger Nicky's anger, and then Kaelin's life would be forfeit. Richard had spent over a year with Nicky, as long a time as he had spent with Kaelin, and Nicky repeatedly had made clear his choices. Kaelin's life was always the price in the balance. Richard had no real choice. At least he would get to see Victor's face when he saw the statue. Richard smiled at that thought. It was the only pleasant prospect the day held. The day was most likely to end in the dark, wet hole where he had been before. He missed a step at that thought. He didn't want to go back into that place. It was so small. Richard didn't like being trapped, especially in small places. He didn't like either of those concepts. Together they were terrifying. As fearful as the prospect of such a fate was, he had carved the statue with conscious intent and with forethought, knowing the probability of the eventual price. What he had accomplished was worth that price. Slavery was not life. Nicky had once promised him that if he died or chose death, that would in itself be her answer, and she would not harm Kaelin. Now Richard could only put his faith in that promise. The statue existed. That was what mattered. Life existed. People needed to see that. So many people in the old world needed to see that life existed and was to be lived. For so early in the morning there was an unusual amount of activity on the streets of Aaltoarang. Now and again, squads of heavily armed city guards rushed down the streets. There were a lot of people come to the city for the dedication celebration. He supposed that was why there were so many people out on the streets. The guards paid him no attention. He knew they soon would. When he arrived at the retreat, Richard was shocked by what he saw. The open miles of grounds were covered with people. They crowded in around the palace walls like ants around spilled honey. He couldn't even begin to estimate how many people blanketed the surrounding hills. It was disorienting to see the panoply of color where before he had seen only brown dirt and green winter rye. He had no idea that this many people had wanted to come to the dedication, but then he had been working day and night for months. How would he hear what people planned? Richard skirted the worst of the throngs and made his way up the road toward the blacksmith shop. He wanted to get Victor and go down with him to the site to see the statue before the order came out to begin the dedication. Victor would no doubt be eagerly waiting. The road was crowded with people. They seemed excited, happy, and expectant. It was a far cry from the way most people in the old world usually appeared or behaved. Maybe a celebration, even one such as this, was better than the rest of their dreary days. A half mile from Victor's place, a wild-looking Brother Neil leaped into the road and thrust an arm in Richard's direction.
"There he is! Grab him!"
Guards combing throughout the surrounding crowds drew weapons at Neil's command. As they swept in around him, Richard's first instinct was to fight. In an instant, he had assessed the enemy and calculated his attack. He had only to grab one sword from a clumsy guard, and he would have them all. In his own mind, the grisly deed was already done. He had only to bring it to reality. The guards came at him in a dead run. People scattered out of the way, some screaming in fright. There was the matter of Neil, though. Neil was a wizard, but Richard could deal with that threat, too. Need powered his ability, need and anger. He certainly had enough anger for the task, that part of him that the Sword of Truth used, that rage of dark violence, already thundered through him, except that Nikki had told him that if he used his magic, Kaelin would die. Would she know? Sooner or later, she would. Richard stood submissively still as the guards roughly seized him by his arms to subdue him. Others snatched his shirt from behind. What did it really matter? If he resisted, it would only hurt Kaelin. If they executed him, Nikki would let Kaelin live her life. But he didn't want to go back into that dark hole. Neil raced up, shaking a finger in Richard's face.
"What is the meaning of this cipher? What did you think you were going to accomplish?"
"May I ask what you are talking about, Brother Neil?" Neil's face was crimson.
"The statue."
"What? You don't like it?" With all his might, Neil slammed his fist into Richard's middle. The guards holding him laughed. Richard had seen it coming and had tightened his muscles, but it still drove the wind from him. He finally managed to draw his breath. Neil found that he enjoyed administering punishment and did it again.
"Oh, you're going to pay for your blasphemy, Cipher. You're going to pay the price this time. You'll confess to it all before we're done, but first you'll watch your wicked perversion destroyed."
Neil, his face twisted with superior self-righteous indignation, gestured to the burly guards.
"Let's get him down there, and don't be shy about making way through the crowd."
By mid-morning, Kaelin's hopes of the blacksmith showing up had all but vanished.
"I'm sorry," Camille said, looking glum as he watched her pace. "I don't know why Victor isn't here. I thought he would be. I really did."
Kaelin finally halted and gave the worried lad a pat on the shoulder.
"I know you did, Camille. With the celebration today, and with what's going on down there with the statue, this is hardly a normal day around here, I'm sure."
"Look," Kara said. Kaelin saw she was peering down toward the palace.
"Guards with spears are moving the crowd off the plaza."
Kaelin squinted off down at the hill.
"Your eyes are better than mine. I can't tell."
She cast a frustrated glare at the closed blacksmith shop.
"But it's doing us no good waiting up here. Let's see if we can make it down there and get a better look."
Kaelin put a restraining hand on Kara's arm.
"But let's not start a war with this crowd."
Kara's mouth twisted in exasperation. Kaelin turned to the young man, kicking a toe at the dirt, looking shamed by his failed plan to help them find Richard.
"Camille, will you do something for me?"
"Sure, what?"
"Would you wait up here in case Richard comes here, or even the blacksmith? If the blacksmith comes to his shop, he might know something."
Camille stretched his neck and gazed down at the palace.
"Well, all right. If Richard does come here, I wouldn't want him to miss you. What shall I tell him if I see him?"
Kaelin smiled.
"That I love him," she thought, but said instead, "Tell him I'm here with Kara, and we've gone down there looking for him. If he does show up, I don't want to miss him. Have him wait here. We'll come back."
Kaelin thought they could make it down to the plaza to have a look, but everyone else seemed to have the same idea. It took forever just to make it down the hill to the grounds. The closer they got, the tighter the people were jammed together. Kaelin's progress ground to a halt. It was a struggle just to keep contact with Kara. Everyone in the crowd seemed intent on squeezing forward toward the plaza. More people crushed in all the time. Kaylin soon realized that she and Kara were trapped in the press of people. The conversation on everyone's lips was about only one thing, the statue. It was late in the day by the time Nikki had worked herself part way toward the plaza. Every inch gained had been a struggle. She was close enough to see the people up around the statue, but she could get no closer. Try as she might, she could not make any more headway. Just like her, everyone else wanted to get closer, too. They were pressed up against her, pinning her arms. It was at times a frightening, helpless feeling. She managed to pull one arm free so she could help herself maintain her balance. It came to her that to fall in such circumstances could be fatal. If only she had her power. Her own arrogance had driven her to trading it away. What she had gotten in return, though, was life. But it had cost Richard and Kaylin their freedom. Nikki couldn't simply withdraw her power from the link in order to have use of her gift again, or Kaylin would die. Nikki didn't want her life at the cost of another's. That was what she had come to understand was true evil. Nikki had searched for Richard. She hadn't found him. She hadn't been able to find the blacksmith, Mr. Casella, or Ishak, either. As soon as she could find Richard, she could tell him that she had been wrong, and then they could leave Aotearang. She wanted so much to see his face when she told him she was taking him back to Kaylin, and that she was going to reverse the spell. Of all people, they were the last who should have to suffer for what Nikki had learned. The only place left that she could think to look for him was at the statue. He might be there. Try as she might, though, she couldn't get any closer. Now she realized that she probably couldn't even extract herself from the crush of hundreds of thousands of people around her. There had to be well over 500,000 people in the huge throng around the palace. And then Nikki saw Brother Narev and his disciples appear up on the plaza, all in their dark brown robes, Brother Narev in his creased cap, the rest with their faces hidden in deeply cowled hoods. Crowding the rear of the plaza were a few hundred officials of the order who had traveled in to attend the palace dedication, important men all. If only she had her power, she could have killed them where they stood. It was then that she caught a fleeting glimpse of Richard behind the officials, with guards surrounding him. The whole central area around the plaza was thick with the surly guards. Brother Narev stepped out to the edge of the plaza, all angles under dark robes. Beneath his creased cap, beneath his hooded brow, his dark gaze swept the assembly. The people were in a noisy, emotional state. Brother Narev did not look pleased. But then, Brother Narev never looked pleased. Pleasure, he would say, was wicked. He raised his arms, commanding silence. When the crowd quieted, he began in that terrible grating voice of his, a voice that had haunted her from that day in her house when she was little, that voice that she had allowed to rule her mind, that voice that, along with her mother's, had done her thinking for her.
"Fellow citizens of the Order, we have a special event planned for you today. Today we bring you the spectacle of temptation and more."
His arm glided back toward the statue, his long, thin fingers opened, his voice rumbled with revulsion.
"Evil itself."
The crowd murmured uneasily. Brother Narev smiled, the thin slash of his mouth pleating back his hollow cheeks as he grinned like death's own skull. His eyes were as dark as his robes. The setting sun was fleeing the scene, taking clarity, leaving behind the tremors of flickering light from the dozens of torches to cast their flickering orange light across the massive columns towering behind the plaza, and the weak light of the moon to wash the faces of the grim officials. The air, so cloying with the heavy scents of the crowd, had turned chill.
"Fellow citizens of the Order,"
Brother Narev said in a voice that Nikki thought might crack the stone walls,
"today you will see what happens to evil when confronted by the virtue of the Order."
He hooked a skeletal finger, signaling behind the heads of the officials. Guards muscled Richard forward. Nikki cried out, but her voice was lost in the clamor of tens of thousands of other voices. Brother Neil swaggered forward then,
lugging with him a sledgehammer. Nicky checked to the sides and saw that there were several thousand armed guards at hand. More screened the plaza off from the people. Brother Narev had taken no chances. Neil, with a polite smile and a deferential bow, handed the sledgehammer to Brother Narev. Brother Narev lifted the sledgehammer above his head, as if it were a sword held high in triumph.
"Evil, wherever it is found, must be destroyed."
He aimed the weaving head of the sledgehammer toward the statue.
"This is a thing of evil, created by an extremist who hates his fellow man, to victimize the weak. He contributes nothing to the advancement of his fellow man, nothing to the succor of his fellow man, nothing to the education or support of his fellow man. He offers only lewd and profane images to prey on the susceptible and feeble-minded among us."
The crowd was silent in their bewildered disappointment. From what Nicky could tell as she had walked among them throughout the day, they had come to believe that this statue was some new offering by the order to the people, some grand thing for them to see at the Empress Palace, some bright shining hope. They were confused and stunned by what they were hearing. Brother Narev lifted the sledgehammer.
"Before this criminal's corpse is hung from a pole for his crimes against the order, he is to see his vile work destroyed to the cheers of virtuous people."
As the sun's last ray fled below the horizon, Brother Narev lifted the heavy sledgehammer high in the flickering light of smoking torches. The sledgehammer wobbled momentarily at the apex of its arc before descending in a heavy swing. The crowd sent up a collective gasp as the steel head rang out when it struck the male statue's leg. A few small chips fell away. It had done surprisingly little damage. In the absolute silence, Richard laughed derisively at Brother Narev's impotent swing. Even from the distance, Nicky could see Brother Narev's face turning crimson as Richard stood watching and chuckling. The crowd murmured, hardly able to believe any man would laugh at a brother of the order, at Brother Narev himself. Brother Narev could hardly believe it. The dozens of guards who had their spears leveled at Richard could hardly believe it. In the tense silence, Richard's laugh echoed off the semicircle of stone walls and soaring columns behind them. Death's grin returned. Brother Narev lifted the sledgehammer by the head, its weight awkward in his bony hand, and held the handle out to Richard.
"You will destroy your depraved work yourself."
The words, "or you will die on the spot," were not spoken, but everyone heard them implied. Richard accepted the handle of the sledgehammer. He could have looked no more noble doing so if he had been taking a jewel-encrusted sword. Richard's raptor gaze left Brother Narev and swept out over the crowd as he took several strides toward the steps. Brother Narev lifted a finger, signaling the guards to hold their spears. By the smirk on the faces of Brothers Narev and Neil, they didn't think the crowd would care to hear anything a sinner had to say.
"You are ruled," Richard said in a voice that rang out over the multitude, "by mean little men."
The people gasped as one. To speak against a brother was treason, most likely, and heresy for sure.
"My crime?" Richard asked aloud. "I have given you something beautiful to see, daring to hold the conviction that you have a right to see it, if you wish. Worse, I have said that your lives are your own to live."
A rolling murmur swept out through the multitude. Richard's voice rose in power, demanding in its clarity to be heard above the whispering.
"Evil is not one large entity, but a collection of countless small depravities brought up from the muck by petty men. Living under the order, you have traded the enrichment of vision for a gray fog of mediocrity, the fertile inspiration of striving and growth for mindless stagnation and slow decay, the brave new ground of the attempt for the timid quagmire of apathy."
With gazes riveted and lips still, the crowd listened. Richard gestured out over their heads with his sledgehammer, wielded with the effortless grace of a royal sword.
"You have traded freedom not even for a bowl of soup, but worse,
for the spoken empty feelings of others who say that you deserve to have a full bowl of soup provided by someone else. Happiness, joy, accomplishment, achievement are not finite commodities to be divided up. Is a child's laughter to be divided up and allotted? No, simply make more laughter.
Laughter, pleased laughter, rippled through the crowd. Brother Narev's gall grew.
We've heard enough of your extremist rambling. Destroy your profane statue now.
Richard cocked his head.
Oh? The collective assembly of the order and of brothers fears to hear what one insignificant man could say? You fear mere words that much, Brother Narev?
Dark Eyes stole a quick glance at the crowd as they leaned forward, eager to hear his answer.
We fear no words. Virtue is on our side and will prevail. Speak your blasphemy, so all may understand why moral people will side against you.
Richard smiled out at the people, but he spoke with brutal honesty.
Every person's life is theirs by right. An individual's life can and must belong only to himself, not to any society or community, or he is then but a slave. No one can deny another person their right to their life, nor seize by force what is produced by someone else, because that is stealing their means to sustain their life. It is treason against mankind to hold a knife to a man's throat and dictate how he must live his life. No society can be more important than the individuals who compose it, or else you ascribe supreme importance not to man, but to any notion that strikes the fancy of that society at a never-ending cost of lives. Reason and reality are the only means to just laws. Mindless wishes, if given sovereignty, become deadly masters. Surrendering reason to faith in these men sanctions their use of force to enslave you, to murder you. You have the power to decide how you will live your life. These mean little men up here are but cockroaches, if you say they are. They have no power to control you but that which you grant them.
Richard pointed with the sledgehammer back at the statue.
This is life, your life, to live as you choose.
He swept the head of the sledgehammer in an arc, pointing out the carvings up on the walls.
This is what the Order offers you, death.
We've heard enough of your blasphemy, Brother Narev shrieked. Destroy your evil creation now or die.
The spears rose. Richard calmly swept a fearless glance around at the guards, then stepped to his statue. Nikki's heart was pounding against her ribs. She didn't want it destroyed. It was too good to destroy. This couldn't be happening. They couldn't take this away. Richard rested the sledgehammer across his shoulder. He lifted his other hand up to the statue as he addressed the crowd one last time.
This is what the Order is taking from you. Your humanity, your individuality, your freedom to live your own life.
Richard briefly touched the sledgehammer to his forehead. With a mighty swing, the steel head arced around. Nikki could hear the air whistle. The entire statue seemed to shudder as the sledgehammer struck the base with a thunderous boom.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 20.